Welcome back to WBOI Presents. We're listening to the Trapdoors March Story Showcase. I'm Ben Clemmer, and it's great to be with you. The next person you're about to hear is John Cheesebrew, introducing the final speaker of the night, known affectionately as Aunt Jane. Thank you for listening.
I'm going to introduce another storyteller, and they're going to have to do it, but she can. That's the good thing. It's super good to see new people on the stage, so thanks for that. So I'm really excited because this is the first time that I get to introduce this storyteller, and I'm not going to do it justice. Ben always gets to introduce Aunt Jane, but I get to introduce Aunt Jane this time. She's not my aunt, by the way. She's Ben's aunt, but she's a trapdoor veteran and as such has become all of our Aunt Jane, and I'm so excited. Because like David, Aunt Jane can get up and tell a story. Aunt Jane is one of those rare people that could get up in the middle of not a trapdoor event and tell a story like that. Like, she has a story for everything, but they're all good. And it blows my mind every time. They run the gamut from, like, bizarre family interactions to delivering a baby in a snowstorm to who knows. I don't know. And I'm really excited because I have no idea what this story is about, and I've been looking forward to it for days. So I'm going to stop talking and let Aunt Jane come up and tell a story.
Ben said that there would be new storytellers and old. Obviously, I'm the old. It's all right. I'm good with old. I figured, you know, trapdoor, you're a bunch of artsy people. In another life, I was a singer in an acoustic band. And I figured there's probably enough musicians out there that I should tell about bad gigs we have played. We got a lot of those. And also, for Christy's benefit, as well as for anybody else who's in the market to get married, I'll give a little wedding planning advice, because I love weddings. My husband and I met in college, and one day he and his musician friends invited me and my friends to a coffee house to hear them play. And we went, and they were great musicians, but a little rough around the edges. In the arrogance of youth, I thought, well, what they really need is a lady singer. So I offered to do that for them. A little while later, we heard them play at another coffee house. It was a church coffee house, a Baptist church coffee house, a teetotaler Baptist church coffee house. Nobody's listening. Everybody's rowdy and noisy and rude. And so the band decides, well, David and his friends decide, they'll do a little song called Wine Blues, looking for a reaction. Nothing. No one says anything. So they follow that up with a tribute to a moonshiner, a song called Dooley. Again, nothing. At which point, Ben's father says, you people don't really give a f*** what we sing up here, do you? So clearly that was my place in the band, to be the buffer. And eventually, David and I and a rotating group of friends and relatives formed a group called Rosewood. And we did traditional music of North America and the British Isles. Now, musically, the British Isles are not monolithic. You got your Welsh and the English and the Scots and the Irish. We didn't do a lot of Welsh songs. They mostly sing pretty songs about love and God. And the Scots, we sang a lot of their songs. They sing songs about love and revolution. And the English, we did a lot of English songs. They sing songs about love and murder. And the Irish sing songs about love and revolution and the drink. So we, with that repertoire, we got asked to play a lot of St. Paddy's Day parties and Burns dinners. Burns dinners are usually organized by pipe bands, Scottish pipe bands. And we always had to close out the evening rather than the pipers closing it out because they were generally not ambulatory, having started with the scotch pouring it on their haggis, which is the first course. But those gigs are not real lucrative. We played a lot of festivals. Now, festivals can be lucrative, but you don't always know what you're getting into. We played a festival in Spencerville, one time, and we were told there'll be a stage and a sound system. Sweet. So we go, and we're taken to the stage, which is two pallets in an open field with no sound system. And because there is no shade in the open field and the temperature is about 92, there's no audience. So eventually the organizer said, well, let's find you a shady place to play. And we ended up, I swear this is true, sitting on a curb on a side street. It was shady. Then we played for about 45 minutes to about four people. And that was when I developed the philosophy, what do I care? The check's already written. We went to another festival. We got asked to play at a state park about 90 miles from here. And we were to open the festival first thing in the morning. So they said, we'll put you up in one of the state park cabins. Sweet. So we load up all our gear and an odd friend who had just been thrown out by his wife. And we went to the park, get to the gatehouse. And we say, we're the band. Where's our cabin? And he said, well, all the cabins filled up, so we're giving you a tent cabin. Okay. He said, it's over there. And if I were you, I'd get your gear unpacked before the sun goes down. Vampires? No. I said, why is that? He said, because the mosquitoes can get pretty bad. Well, we get our gear unpacked, and we're thinking, hey, campfire, we got citronella candles, we've got insect repellent, we'll be fine. And then the sun goes down, and we are hit by a tsunami of mosquitoes. These were not pretty bad mosquitoes. These were mosquitoes who had discovered fire and carried union cards. They came at the citronella candles in swarms and died in the flames. And in the morning, we found about a half an inch of dead mosquitoes congealed in the wax. We played weddings. Now, weddings can be lucrative, too. The problem with weddings is there are a whole bunch of variables about which you have no control. For one thing, people want to choose their own music. If you're going to choose music for the band to play, and I'm talking like the wedding ceremony, not the reception, you need to understand the capability of the people that you have engaged. We played for a wedding. The groom was actually the son of a guy in our band. And he tried mightily to convince the bride's mother that Wagner's Wedding March was not an appropriate choice for a guitar. To no avail. Now, David, to his credit, came up with a perfectly accurate version of Here Comes the Bride on the 12th string. But it took about 10 hours of his life that he'll never have back. There are some songs that happen, people ask for at weddings, that are just dreadful. In fact, there are whole pages and pages of bad songs about weddings. There are a couple that you should absolutely avoid. This is for you, Christy. This is the wedding planning advice. Don't do the Paul Stuckey wedding song. It's so horrible. It's droning random words. Yada-da-da-da-da, there is love. I mean, the tune is so tedious and the words are incomprehensible. If you turn those words into a legitimate writing course, they would come back to you with a big WTF at the top. They're terrible. They're terrible. And sunrise, sunset. No. Just no. Especially no if the bride's dear friend is a flute player who's going to play along with you. And the bride's dear friend, had she joined the Tune It or Die tour, would have been a casualty. So that's a bad thing about weddings. If you really trust the band that's playing at your wedding, just say, give me some suggestions and have them run through them and go from there. That's another tip right for you there, Christy. Another variable is that good money, you have to really get the money for the wedding. Now, we just sucked as business people. We're musicians. We're not business people. We sucked at it, and we never had the brass ass to say, pay us before we sing. So we're playing a wedding, people we didn't know from at all, double wedding, sisters getting married, at a park in Huntington. So we drive down there, and we unload all our gear. It's a beautiful day. It's a beautiful day. And then as guests are assembling, and we begin the pre-service music, the sky kind of begins to darken. And by the time the bride's coming down the aisle, it's real dark. And by the time the mothers are doing their candle lighting thing, we can hear thunder. And they get to the vows, which they have written themselves, and they're heartfelt and wonderful. And the officiant said, we're going to go right to the do you take and I do part because of the weather. So they say I do. They beat it out there. Everybody beats it out. No one hears the closing music that we're playing. And we have not been paid. So I have to go up to one of the brides and say, we have not been paid. So the lightning is blazing and the thunder is rumbling. And she leans against a rock and writes us out a check. And then we grab our instruments and beat it to the car, which is parked about a quarter mile away. And just as we throw things in the car, the heavens open. When we got home, we realized that we had left a bag that had my Bowron, which is a drum, and some irreplaceable Oriden whistles in it. Speaking of Oriden, Pat Oriden died on Tuesday. If you have a glass, I would raise it to Pat's memory. Wonderful musician, a wonderful man, and a great drinker. Another variable about weddings is the people involved. When you're playing at a wedding as opposed to a wedding reception, you're expected to kind of warm up the crowd by playing some pre-service music. And we were playing for a wedding of a dear friend, dear friend's brother, and he was also our friend. And we're playing a few tunes, and finally the family says, you know, Bruce is not here yet, the groom. Why don't you just sit down till he shows up? And we're waiting about a half an hour, and still no Bruce. And the family's saying, okay, we're going to go and see if he's broken down by the highway somewhere or something's happened to him. And up comes Bruce in his pickup truck. And he gets out of the truck, big grin on his face, 60 pairs of eyes glare at him. And he's like, what? As it happens, as he was leaving his house to come to his own wedding, he noticed the neighbor's cows had gotten out. Not his cows, mind you, but the neighbor's cows had gotten out. And he prioritized rounding up the cows and getting them back in the fence over his own wedding. Incredibly, the marriage didn't last. You'll find that hard to believe. Now, to be fair, the bride should have had a clue, because not too long before the wedding, this same young man had a hog to be butchered, and somebody borrowed his truck, so he attached a trash bag around the business end of the hog with duct tape and took it to the processor in his car, a Chevette, by way of the McDonald's drive-thru. So that should have been a clue to her. But that was not good. Another late coming person in a wedding. We played for a wedding, people we knew, and they had carefully chosen about 10 minutes worth of love songs for prior to the service, and we get through those and kind of looking around for the wedding to begin, and the bride's mother is in the back going, like, keep going, okay? So we keep going for about another 10, 15 minutes, and somebody comes up and says, the bride's favorite sister is not here. She's a bridesmaid. She's not here yet. Can you just keep playing till she gets here? Okay. But we're about out of love songs. So we get to the drinking song. So it was a cheerful upbeat. And it's about another 15 minutes, and we're trying to choose between revolution and murder when the bride's sister finally shows up. So we've got through that wedding. And now comes like the worst wedding gig we ever played. The worst gig of any kind we ever played, because all of the variables go very downhill in this wedding. It's a woman who works with my sister, and she's having a wedding in Lakeside Park. Beautiful setting, lovely place for a wedding. She, of course, wants sunrise, sunset at the wedding. Okay. And so we're up there, we're only going to do like two songs before the wedding, and then a song as she walked down the aisle, then we're done. We, you know, probably 8 minutes of music altogether. That's all right. We can do that. But we start a few minutes before the wedding time with the pre-service stuff, and the groom is still not there. So she asks us to keep going, and so we're playing. And about 20 minutes after the time that the wedding is supposed to start, roughly four times the amount of time we were contracted to play, the groom's cousin pulls up and says, "The groom is not coming." Of course, the bride bursts into tears. There's hysteria. We're sitting there thinking, oh, dear God, how could this get any worse? It does. After the initial hysteria, the bride's mother comes up to us and announces, well, the groom was supposed to pay you, and she doesn't have any money, so we don't get paid. Now, that is our worst gig ever, and I'm hoping that if any of you out there are performers of some sort and have had a worse gig, please come to Trapdoor and tell it so we won't feel like such losers.